after waiting in September, and now here I am, dusting
good to see
off,
you.
And thank you.
This has been a few months coming.
Indeed, yes. I got my little script here today, so it's not going to be super lively, but we're just getting started talking to you about enforcement. I'm Diana Henriel. I hope I'm picking up here. I'm not sure. I'm your senior engineer in charge of the Enforcement Grants and Land Disposal Unit. I am presenting item 7, an update on our region's enforcement activities. So this is more of an introduction. Our EOSR mentions that this is likely to be the first in a series of presentations about our enforcement program. And Chris Kerrigan mentioned that we might be having a, might want to talk about enforcement priorities in a workshop in the future. So he's giving you a glimpse of where we're going in the future. But today what I'll be discussing is some of the background of our and recent history of our enforcement program, how we formed our dedicated enforcement unit, and what we've been doing over the last few years since we formed the unit. So first a little background, and I don't know, am I showing? Pardon me? Well, maybe I don't have a little slideshow. Okay. Sure, that's fine. Yeah. These just are kind of little outlines of what I'm saying anyway. So in November 2004, Cal EPA released an enforcement initiative that called for a number of actions by the boards and departments in the agency to strengthen their enforcement effort. I think this was part of an overall push by a Schwarzenegger administration to improve environmental protection and step up enforcement. Cal EPA secretary sent a letter to the State Water Board recommending ways to improve the Water Board's enforcement program, and in response, in 2005, the State Board developed an enforcement plan with several proposed activities and an implementation schedule. One of those activities was an enforcement reorganization within the regional water boards, and the different regional boards responded differently to the directive. Some just designated an enforcement coordinator position and kept their enforcement resources and activities spread out throughout their offices, while others formed dedicated enforcement units and pooled resources from different parts of the office together to fund the unit. And that's what we did, the latter. Our management spent some time coming up with a list of duties they envisioned that such a unit would take on over the short or long term. So this is my first slide. It's just a list. The duties that this unit was envisioned to take over included processing high-level enforcement cases, maintaining a procedures manual with up-to-date guidance and templates for enforcement, coordinating with other agencies and enforcement actions and activities, maintaining a viable spill response program, acting as a clearinghouse for all complaint calls, and tracking and prioritizing violations. In May 2005, CAT announced that we would be forming a dedicated enforcement unit consisting of a senior engineer and several staff. And for starters, the unit would be working on high priority and backlog core regulatory enforcement cases throughout the region. And the unit would act as a clearinghouse for complaints and spills, triaging and assigning spills to other units. In fact, it actually turned out it was going to take most of the unit's time over the next few years just to catch up with the backlog core regulatory violation cases, namely dealing with the violations that needed mandatory minimum penalties. And Chris mentioned the MMP initiative. I'll tell you a little bit about what that is and what happened. January 1st, 2000, new legislation required that certain permit violations under the Water Code, specifically violations associated with discharges of waste directly into surface waters, be subject to mandatory minimum penalties. Technical assistance is here, technical support. Violations be subject to mandatory minimum penalties. Regional water boards started assessing penalties on such violations shortly thereafter, but the process was slow, and violations were racking up pretty quickly. So there was a big pile of violations that that needed these mandatory penalties. In this region, we have many small communities with older systems and limited funds to make the necessary improvements to be able to meet their permitted discharge limits. So even as we took enforcement on past violations that were accruing, more were piling up as we went. So it was kind of hard to keep up. Looking back at the ACLCs we issued between 2000 and 2005, we issued about 15 ACLCs to MPDS permitted dischargers. once we had formed the enforcement unit, 2005 alone, we issued 19 ACLCs to MPDS dischargers. So our capacity to address these violations went up dramatically once we had a new enforcement unit. Unfortunately, the volume of violations and rate of accrual was high enough that by the end of 2007, State Water Board's Office of Enforcement...
Oh, you've got a screen now.
I do. How nice. Okay. Is this the MMP? Okay, I think that's the right slide. Okay, so we're doing things faster, but we weren't doing them fast enough to keep up with things. So State Water Board, the Office of Enforcement said, wow, you know, only 40% of the violations from January 2000 through December 2007, okay, 60% had been taken care of, but 40% had still not been addressed. So they decided we needed to speed things up and catch up with the backlog and address all the violations through the end of December 2007 by the end of 2008. And they called this the MMP Initiative. And over the course of 2008 and 2009, we were able to meet the MMP Initiative goal, and we finally caught up with the backlog. So through the end of 2007, we had addressed about 860 violations. And for the last big push over the next couple of years, then we addressed 550 more violations.
Wow.
We used a couple of different enforcement tools. For smaller total penalties, we sent expedited payment letters that offered a discharger an opportunity to pay the penalty without contesting the violations without a formal hearing before the board. So it was just kind of a notice of violation sort of ticket thing, and people could pay it that way. Larger or contested penalties went through the usual ACL process, and in the course of settling these penalties, we usually accepted a partial payment to the cleanup and abatement account and allowed the communities, allowed the dischargers, the communities, to apply the rest of the penalty to a project. And several of our smaller communities were able to qualify to perform compliance projects that helped to improve their collection, treatment, and disposal systems, which directly addressed some of the problems that were leading to their permit violations. In 2009, caught up with the backlog, we set ourselves a schedule to review our MPDS permittees regularly and keep on top of the MMP violations. So in this region, we have about 42 MPDS permittees at this time. We have four technical staff in the unit that review them, and each staff has their own group of dischargers, permittees that they look at over the course of each year. Next slide. In 2009, we also started reviewing and including penalties for sewage spills and other permit violations that are subject to discretionary penalties. So we're not held to a legislative minimum penalty for those, but instead we have to review a number of factors related to the nature and impacts of the violation and related to the discharger and the discharger's response to given violation in order to set the penalty. We added this to our MMP review to make sure we'd looked at and considered all a permittee's violation during each review period. We also had more time available to expand our involvement in other enforcement-related activities in the region. And some of the things we have been doing regularly included regularly participating in the Environmental Task Force meetings and joint inspections and enforcement actions with other resource protection agencies. We have Environmental Enforcement Task Force groups in Sonoma, Mendocino, and Humboldt counties, a marijuana-related task force group in Trinity County that formed last year, off and on task forces in Del Norte and Siskiyou counties. And we've been participating in a recently formed federal environmental task force and are involved in their marijuana subcommittee. So we're seeing a lot of environmental effects related to pollution from properties developed to grow marijuana. You'll be hearing more about that, I think, in future presentations. In the past couple of years, we've been able to work on more non-MMP ACLC cases when needed and referred to us by other units. We provide technical assistance and review to other units as they pursue non-ACL enforcement actions, and we investigate and initiate progressive enforcement on violation cases that don't fit neatly into our various programs and units in the office. So if it looks like it covers a lot of programs and everyone's kind of like, well, you know, it's kind of somebody else's, then we'll take those on. For about a year now, we've also been maintaining an office-wide complaint tracking system, started in early 2009 in Mark Alpert's Southern Timber Unit, tracking timber and non-point source complaints. Stormer Filer of his unit was responsible for gathering and tracking the complaints, and he joined our enforcement unit in September 2010, so it's been a bit over a year now. with the complaint system. He came over with that, and we now track all types of spills and complaints we receive about non-permitted facilities. We ran into a few hitches along the way as we started adding new things on top of the MMPs. When we first added discretionary violations and spills to our MMP reviews, we were looking back all the way to 2000, the date of the MMP legislation, and there were a lot of violations, and that combined with changing templates, the new enforcement policy that became effective May 2009 with its penalty methodology that we needed to use for coming up with discretionary penalties, and the different types of review comments we get back from the different attorneys that we worked with at the Office of Enforcement, some of our ACLCs combining all violations got kind of bogged down. So we've spent more time working with the Office of Enforcement to find out what their expectations and priorities were for violation review, and we started limiting our review of past violations to those from the past 3 years, those that were more significant or that had more severe impacts or threatened impacts to water quality, and spills that are more than 50,000 gallons to receiving water, or groups of spills that seem to form a pattern of poor maintenance or spill response. And that's helped to really streamline our permit compliance reviews. And some good news, we're starting to see marked decline in the rate of MMP violations that are accruing. The compliance projects that some of our dischargers and communities have been working on are starting to pay off at facilities like McKinleyville, Ferndale, Healdsburg, Eureka, and Crescent City, just to name a few. It's likely the MMP legislation and our related enforcement has also led to facility and operational improvements in general that have reduced the number of violations. For many of our facilities, we're seeing fewer and less significant violations with each successive compliance review. It's nice to see our enforcement efforts are making a difference here. And there are a lot of permitted dischargers that are making a real effort to improve and update their systems. It's great for water quality and beneficial use protection. And I think some of our future enforcement presentations will do a little spotlight and highlight of some of these success stories. We also see a few smaller dischargers that simply haven't been able to pull together the funding they need to make facility upgrades and improvements yet. One of these, the city of Tule Lake, is getting close, though, closer and closer. The board issued $495,000 ACL to Tule Lake in 2007, and Manny Baldenegro of our enforcement unit has been working with the city and with the water board, state water board, to help secure state revolving fund money for system improvements. It's been pretty involved. It's been kind of like herding cats to get everything together to get the approval and the funding. But we are getting close, and I'm hoping we can report success on that soon. And if it works, we'll try doing this with some of our other especially financially challenged communities and help to line up similar funding programs. I don't think any of the kids are here today. Storm or Filer might be here somewhere, but I think most of them aren't here right now. But our team right now consists of Bill Rodriguez, Cecile Morris, Manny Baldenegro, Nancy Robinson, and Storm or Filer. A few of the names and faces have changed since we first started. Originally, Tom Dunbar was chief of the unit, but when he retired in 2008, that's when I joined the team. But I think you'll be meeting the rest of the group in future presentations. I know Stormer's chomping at the bit to make a presentation to you in the near future. And here he is. I started this presentation with a list of the duties and that our managers envisioned for our enforcement unit in 2005, and now seven years later. Though we still have some work to do, I think we've come a long way towards realizing that vision. We're processing, as far as processing high-level enforcement cases, we're doing that. We've caught up on MMPs. We're staying caught up. We're working on or assisting with ACLs for other types of violations. Maintaining the procedures manual, we work closely with OE and our OCC staff to maintain up-to-date guidance, information, and templates for different types of enforcement orders. We share this with staff and managers and other units, and we generally provide technical support as needed for our enforcement cases office-wide. Coordinating with other agencies. I mentioned we participate in several task forces and joint enforcement efforts with members of those task forces. We also participate in enforcement roundtables and training with staff from the state and other regional boards, so we keep to date on statewide enforcement policy and issues and statewide consistency. maintaining a viable spill response program. I haven't mentioned that, but there's been a project in our office, not through the enforcement unit, to get together a spill team, spill response plan, supplies, and equipment. And with great effort from several of our staff, we've revived our regional lab and been certified to analyze for bacteria and coliform, so we can do some things in-house. Acting as a clearinghouse for complaints, I mentioned our complaint tracking system and Stormer's efforts, and you'll hear more about that in the future. Complaints go to Stormer. He assesses and refers them to appropriate in-house and outside contacts. And he and sometimes I go out and recon the cases that we're not sure how to refer. And we try to meet regularly with management staff in the office and in the other units and divisions to check on complaint response status, give them little reports and show them pictures of new cases that we've reconned or that we've gotten information about. And we talk about how to respond to them and who to assign them to. And this is starting to become a good venue for us to talk about enforcement prioritization as well. Tracking and prioritizing violations. We're tracking violations through the State Board's CWICS database. And as we input violations, we also rank the violations 1, 2, or 3 based on several criteria related mostly to their nature and threat to water quality. And we typically respond to class 1 and 2 violations with some sort of an ACL response. We can and will be giving you more details about these different duties, as well as our office-wide enforcement program and efforts in future presentations. And I don't know what the next installment will be yet, but we're taking requests, and we'll hand it over for questions if you have any, or see you again soon.
Diane, thank you. It's very good to see you here.
Thank you.
It took a while, but it was definitely worth it.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm a little rusty. Sorry.
It's perfectly fine. Board member questions or comments? Mr. Corbett.
Yes, I will end with a question. But first, I want to thank you for the tremendous response to the State Board initiative on enforcement and also setting up a statewide enforcement unit. And then that was adopted by the Regional Board as a policy direction. And I think you've done a great job of catching up on enforcement, and you're to be commended. If you look at where we were in 2008 and where we are now, it's considerable improvement.
You got a great team.
I also think, and my impression is that the regional board embraced the state enforcement unit not as a threat to our authority, but as a that by combining together, we would have additional resources and more consistency of enforcement, both within the region and with other regions. And I think that was very good. And I also want to say many of the small sewer districts, when we started under mandatory minimum penalties, didn't know enough to put in reopeners. And what I've seen over, so that they would run into a problem, and then the anti-backsliding provisions would sometimes not allow them to open it and put them in mandatory minimum penalties. And I really seen an improvement on staff right from the get-go and putting in permits, especially for the smaller districts that can't really afford an engineer that were very savvy to protect the larger interest to take care of it. And I think that's prevented causing unnecessary mandatory minimum penalties, although I don't love that law. But I did have one last question, and that is in 2008, the problem was defined in two ways. One was we were just behind and we had to catch up and do our job, which I think we've done. The second was I know at that time there were problems with the state computer system and how it tracked enforcement violations, which considerably exaggerated our lack of enforcement, let me put it that way. Have those been cured?
We've been working hard on making what we're reporting in CWICS more accurate and linked properly so that it can be so what you put in you can find, and it reports more accurately what we're doing and reflects what we're
Because I think in future reports, if you feel that's still a significant factor, that'd be good to note in what areas it is, so when we read the data, it is what it says it is.
Yeah, at the time, my boss, David Leland, rolled up his sleeves and said, man, you know, I'm going to figure out how this thing works, and we're going to start having it show what we're doing. So,
and a lot of credit goes to, we had Talori Foster, who has worked the system, and some student interns that we had who learned the system and entered some data that we were negligent in putting in. And so it's been a huge effort, but I think we're pretty confident that while the data system is kind of a clunky, unwieldy beast, it produces fairly accurate enough results for us to manage.
Yeah.
Thank you.
More people who know how it works now here, and so it's better.
Mr. Chair. Diane, I want to echo in some respects Mr. Corbett's comments, and I'm just remembering the presentation we had in 2008 with the list, with its multiple colors and categories and where we were. It's just congrats on getting caught up with that. So that's an impressive feat.
Thanks.
Yeah. Diana, I wanted to actually ask you, when the previous, we had a presentation from Office Enforcement a year or two ago, as I recall.
Sato, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked then, I have a hard time myself asking a small district to pay that money. I would like to really put that money back into curing the problems and keeping it in that district instead of writing a check. I'd rather have that to go to solve the problem at home. Looking through, there's a fairly good discussion about how small systems and that is allowed in the MMP process in particular and the compliance projects. But would you maybe just address that and how do you and your unit then, MMPs are a fairly regular and constant thing, mm-hmm. because that's just the way the world is. But then those also, how are you handling those with small systems? Again, my interest is to try and cure that ill,
right,
and not just have them write that check.
The enforcement policy allows for small communities with demonstrated financial need. There's certain qualifications, number of populations served and income. They can apply a significant portion of the penalty towards a compliance project that's geared towards fixing the problems that led to those types of violations. So that has worked for some of our communities. In some communities where they don't qualify for that, they can propose an enhanced compliance project or a supplemental environmental project that may not directly address the problem, but may address another problem that leads to violations. Maybe not something that's necessarily required under their permit, but yet helps to improve the collection or treatment system or something about their discharge.
Can you, as staff, discretionarily apply 100% of an MMP
no.
violation? There is no. a threshold, correct?
There is, yeah.
Okay.
A certain percentage.
By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't recognize from here the importance of the interns in their work and their behind-the-scene work in helping staff. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that. Mr. Corbett, I see
yeah,
you have a
question. Yeah, first of all, you raised a very good point, but the problem with mandatory minimum penalties is the first word, mandatory. But I do believe there's been some changes in the State Board guidelines from where they started out. And then I can't remember, but I think one of the many bills in the legislature did slightly modify MMPs. If not, just want to be updated on that. And just for the board's background, had taken three or four swings in the bat in Sacramento trying to get various bills to deal with the really small communities to address it. The problem the State Board has had is they've repetitively asked for legislative advisement, and the legislature has refused to make much a change in the original law, and so they're bound by color of state law, and then you got the word mandatory. And so that's why some of our staff efforts to help them in the first place and the permits are crucial to keeping some equity in the system. And
sure, and I mentioned the effort we're making with Tule Lake and with the State Board to get state revolving funds a 100% forgiveness loan for improvements at Tule Lake. Yes. And though it has been a lot of work, we would like to try that model on some of our other
And Tule Lake's a really classic example where they're so poor, they couldn't operate their sewer system properly. That's not
the
acceptable,
MPs
but at the same time, paying big fines is not going to help solve the problem.
Yes.
And in response, Mr. Chair, just in response to Mr. Corbett's question, there has been legislation that has eased some of the requirements for small systems to be able to get compliance projects, and there is more legislation pending this year.
Yeah, it sounds like this is a topic of interest, and so one of our future upcoming presentations will give you a few more kind of just case stories.
Oh, thank
stories.
You. I look forward to that.
Yeah.
Ms. Harris, did you have a question?
I, for one, am looking forward to finding out how you're going to deal with the marijuana growers. we're inundated where we live, and it's definitely been an issue, kind of the elephant in the room. How do you regulate the non-regular, you know, we're, the folks that kind of live under the wire. But anyway, so I'm looking forward to that, and willing to help in any way, and hoping that we're really able to make a difference. I hear horror stories, and while I'm running around on the landscape, you see things that are just flabbergasting, and a lot of people who are getting permits and who are running their properties appropriately are just, it's just creating an anger, because they feel like, why do I have to do everything just right? And then these folks are fully, you know, out on their own, not being held responsible for their actions. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that works out. Thank you for making that an issue and dealing with it.
Yeah, I think we and a lot of agencies and communities are struggling with that right now, but I can tell you a lot of the different things that we're involved in that we've been trying.
One of the things outside of just the actual growing sites, too, to consider looking into is the runoff from the massive storage of potting soils and fertilizers. I know in my community we have an enormous pallets and pallets and pallets of potting soil, and when you go to the post office, you can see the runoff from underneath of the store coming out, and it goes straight into the storm drain and straight into Willow Creek, and they're, you know, just huge pallets of fertilizers and different things, and there's nothing being done about it. So it'll be interesting. Good luck.
Thank you. And we accept complaints as well.
Yeah.
it's been spoken of.
Okay.
Well, and maybe the stars align with Mr. Kerrigan and his staff here, and the changes and the maybe just that things line out that way, and that I think enforcement is part of the art of regulation. And as we go, I'd like to hear more about what you're doing, what your staff's doing, how we can work together, and how we liaison with State Board and their efforts in the Office of Enforcement, because I think it's very important. I think it's very important to level the field. I think it's also very important to make regulation real.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I don't have any speaker cards. Any other board questions or comments? This is an information item only, so there's no vote. Or board action, but we do look forward to seeing you again in the future. We won't make it so long next time.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will move on to item 8, which is another information